The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health. On today's program, we will hear the second half of Madeline Corelli's interview with Professor J.P. Hatala of Flowwork International. They will be discussing helpful strategies for older adults who are looking for employment in the workforce. Now, here's Madeline.
Welcome back, Professor Hatala. Thank you so much for our last session, and I'm eager to learn a little bit more from you about the mature worker and entering the workforce or delaying retirement and staying in the workforce, or a mix of those two opportunities. And this time, I'd like to talk a little bit about the strategies that you would recommend, the strategies for an older worker to assist them in finding but also retaining employment. What kind of goals and strategies should we be using?
Yeah, great question. And I think the biggest thing with strategies or goals, and I'll definitely share those with you, is that there's a lot out there. There's a lot of information, but also keep in mind there's a lot of misinformation in terms of, you know, approaching the job search and so forth. But whatever tact you take, you know, keep with it for a little bit, so at least you can look back and evaluate it. So you don't want to try a new technique for one day and then move on to something else. You want to give it time to really properly evaluate it. One of the most important things, I think, from a strategical perspective, is to be realistic. You know what the labor market is like. You can go to StatsCan, you can read the paper, listen to the radio, and find out what's going on with the labor market in terms of what areas are in demand, what are not, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a bunch of websites that you go to. But being realistic is really, really key. And although you may think that, hey, I need to continue to work after you've either retired or you've been in a career for a while, you're still starting at the ground level, regardless of that. Whether it's ground level in terms of working for that organization, whether it's ground level of starting in a particular type of position, but you need to go in with an humble approach and that you're open to learning, you're open to new experiences, that yes, you have a wealth of experiences and jobs and so forth, but you're still open to learn. And I think that's really important, because when you go for an interview, you're really dealing with an individual. You're not necessarily dealing with an organization. The people we speak to that are attached to an organization are individuals, right? They react, they have their own biases and so forth. So you want to put everything at ease. And by going in, being humble and saying that, you know, you're looking for opportunities and you're open to learn and open to experience new things, I think is really, really critical. Especially perhaps when we're working in, you know, a mixed demographic in many, many organizations. So being open to that is really critical. And one would assume, right, correct me if I'm wrong, if you have been around for a while and you have a lot of experience, then of anybody, you would be open to, you know, different possibilities and so forth. So make sure you do kind of a self-check and make sure that you're realistic and that you're humble and that you're open to it. In terms of tactical approaches for finding employment, there's a couple of ways to look at it. One, you could target organizations that you want to work with because they share the same culture, the same values. And of course, you find out about their values and their culture, either going to their website, doing some research, using Google, or using your network, right? Talking to your network and seeing who, you know, kind of works there. And that's one approach. So you go to an organization, then you see what sort of opportunities are available. Or going after specific types of job positions is another tactic that you can take. I think it's really important that, you know, you may be in a position where you need to work. That's a different strategy than if, you know, you're looking because you want to work, or it'd be nice to work and fill your time and so forth. And probably those, there's a little more need on the side of having to work. And so you really want to be tactical, and you want to treat looking for work when you're doing it like a full-time job. And you want to think about, setting targets in your job search. So for example, I'm going to reach out to 5 organizations this week. Next week, I'm going to do 5. And when you reach that 5, do you stop? Because let's face it, it's not necessarily a fun exercise to look for work all the time. But so by setting targets, setting goals, and you reach those, you feel good about yourself psychologically, and you're willing to move on and so forth. So setting realistic targets in terms of who you're reaching out with. And then final thing, like I said, there's a number of different strategy approaches, is tapping into the hidden job market. And the hidden job market is referred to as networking, of course, reaching out to your contacts. And perhaps you're more of an introvert. I challenge you to force yourself to reach out to people and talk to them. I am an introvert myself, and I force myself all the time to speak to people. And one of the tactics that I do is, when we were able to go into stores and so forth, I would stand in line. Instead of just standing there not talking to anybody, I would look to the person in front of me or behind me and say, hey, it's pretty cold outside, or it's pretty warm outside. And more often than not, they're willing to open up a conversation. Helps in 2 ways. 1, you never know what information you can find. And 2, you start practicing kind of starting this small talk, conversational type interaction with people. And so it can be beneficial.
Yeah, I was reading recently about the number of retirees who think that the next best step, the next best opportunity for them is to start their own business. And most of the research that I looked at said, well, that's okay if you have something that you would love to do and you would love to offer your services to someone, but you have to have quite a lot of money available in order to do that. That it's not as easy as just, I'm starting my own, I've got a website and now I'm going to sell things, or I'm going to, confer with people or whatever. It's not as easy as they think. And equally, as you said, you've got to have some goals and you've got to have some targets that you're setting when you're going out and applying for jobs. Even in a good market like today, you still need to set those goals in order to have something to follow up on, and also to set them so that you achieve small steps moving to a bigger step. So I appreciate that for sure. In terms of the development of new skills, because sometimes older workers may not have very well-developed skills in a certain area, and the one I'm going to focus on is technology. And it just may be that they came to technology late, or that they've never been interested in it. They've done jobs where it wasn't necessary. But today and ongoing from today, I suspect that technology is going to be critical to, and technology skills are going to be critical to one's success when looking for work. What would you suggest to an older worker in terms of learning new skills? Is it a good idea? What kind of skills do you think they need? And how best do you learn those skills, before the job opportunity or during the job opportunity? Or do you tell the employer that you're willing to learn?
Yeah, no, I advocate skill development throughout an individual's entire lifespan. We're creatures that, need to develop this in order to survive socially, to survive economically and so forth. But yeah, it really depends on who you are, what type of work you're looking for and so forth. But in terms of developing new skills, you asked prior to or during or after. Prior to doesn't help, because again, it shows you're open to learning new skills, new ways of doing things, et cetera, et cetera. And thanks to technology, there's access to skills development for free on the internet. You can go to LinkedIn, you can go a number of different sites and access many courses, many programs for that matter. A lot of the universities in Canada and the US are offering free, certificates of completion, from project management to how to sell something, whatever it may be. And that's all in part to technology. So when it comes to technology as a skill set, you know, again, it depends on what type of work you're doing. But I think the most important thing is that you find a level of comfort with whatever technology you use. And most of us have a computer or a smartphone. As long as you're comfortable with that, which takes practice and awareness and understanding, you know, how to navigate on a browser. And so if you're comfortable with that and you're able to explain that to an employer, they'll teach you on the job, you know, and it's on the job training, especially, you know, one organization uses a kind of a software platform that's completely different in another organization. So there's nothing specific. So you need to think more globally in terms of your comfort level and your willingness to kind of, you know, learn new things. Most importantly, I think what's advantageous right now in the current times is that organizations are looking for people and they're willing to bring them on board and work with them to mold and develop them into what they need. Perhaps prior to the pandemic or 4 or 5 years ago, employers were saying, we will not bring anybody on board that doesn't have a certain skill set. Not so much anymore, especially when there's such a demand for workers out there. So use that to your advantage by clearly highlighting the fact that you're open to learning new things, that you've demonstrated how you learned new things in the past, by giving specific concrete examples, whether it was learning a hobby, whether it was a past job that you had and you had to learn something new. Highlight those types of things. Put evidence behind what you're saying. And I find with job seekers, whether you're an older worker or not, there's a lot of hot air that goes out. Oh, I'm good at this, I'm good at that. But there's no way, they don't attempt to validate it. And how we validate our performance is by giving examples of when we had to perform in a particular situation. Employers know that one of the best predictors of future performance is past performance. So being able to highlight that in a meaningful way is to your advantage.
I agree. I totally agree.
You are listening to Aging, a New Reality on Northumberland 89.7. And now we return to Madeline Corelli and her interview with Professor J.P. Hetala.
And now I'm coming to a question which I think is an important question, because as we age, and the title of this whole program is Aging a New Reality. As we age, new realities occur constantly, and one of the new realities is that we have inflation and that the cost of living is increasing and the cost of housing has increased and all of the things that go along with that. Why do you think it's beneficial for older people to continue working?
Well, you know, and I alluded to this before, that there may be an economic reality, you know, that I have to work in order to survive. I don't have a pension. I don't have a lot of RRSPs, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's more important than that. I think it's more fundamental to our very existence in that purpose, you know, purpose moves us forward. And when we have purpose, you know, we're more engaged, we're more cognitively, we're exercising our cognition more often, and this is helpful for our mental health or physical health and all those types of things. But I think, you know, people work for 30, 40 years and all of a sudden they stop. What does that do? What does that mean? Maybe at first it's kind of a neat concept, right? I don't have to do what I did before and I can kind of make my own schedule and I can do that. But it takes a lot to fill your hour, your day, your week, your month. I don't know about you, but when I'm off by the end of the vacation, I'm already going, what am I going to do? What else can I do? I got to do something. And so, you know, with filling your days with meaningful work, perhaps can, you know, have some positive effects that we're just not aware of. And those positive effects could be mental and physical health. But more importantly, I think you're going to be happy if you look at the economical, you know, variables, you look at, you know, whether or not you have to work or not have to work, and then choose something that one, you like, and that there's a need for it. And two, that you're not pushing yourself too much. If you have to work full time, don't work past 5 days. Like, find a balance between work and life. Otherwise, there could be some negative effects to that. And the beauty of that, and you could look at the surveys out there, organizations realize that work-life balance, for the first time in probably history of the industrial age, or not the industrial age, sorry, that was a little further back, but the modern age, that work-life balance contributes to a more productive workforce. It contributes to employees that are happy, and they know that if employees are happy and they're contributing in a meaningful way, that they're going to stay. And if they're going to stay, it keeps the whole system moving forward in a positive way. So that work-life balance is really important. And going into it, I think especially for older workers, that 20 years, 30 years ago, it was all about, you know, you're paid for 40 hours, but you're working 60 hours. That's slowly kind of disappearing because of the negative impact. So be confident in the fact that you can go in a situation and not have to, you know, work those extra hours.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I know that for me, the whole idea around purpose, and you mentioned purpose, that if one has purpose, it drives your health. It really does. It keeps you healthier, body, mind, and spirit. If you have a reason to get up every day and you have a reason to support others or to assist others or to provide some kind of situation where it's helpful to others in your community. And it can be anybody and in any role. But the whole idea of purpose is something that really has only gained momentum in the last maybe year. I've heard people talk about purpose and why it is so important in someone's life. And employment, if you like it, certainly gives you purpose. Even if you don't like it, it gives you the purpose of not liking it. But preferably, as you said, it's better to look for something that has a meaning to you personally, because that keeps you healthier and it keeps you more focused on achieving your goal. In terms of your own purpose and in terms of providing information to an employer, how would you best talk about your skills? Like you said, not only do you tell them your skills, but you have to give examples of how you have demonstrated those skills in a variety of situations. And you also talked about competencies. How do you relate, or how does someone relate their skills and or competencies adequately to an employer?
Yeah, great question. And if you think about every individual, whether you're an older worker or not, if you tried to catalog all the knowledge, skills, and abilities you have, it would be quite difficult, wouldn't it? To think, oh, well, I have this skill and this is where I got it. I have this ability, this work, and so forth. Probably the best way of cataloging your skill sets is to look at the type of opportunity you're going after. Let's just take, for example, a customer service representative. If you were to Google customer service representative skill sets, it would bring you back a list of all the skills required to be an effective customer service rep. Then you could start to use that to say, okay, as a self-assessment, what do I have? What am I strong at? What am I not so strong at? And so forth. And when you go through that process of assessing your skill set based on the list that you're getting from the internet, you could start to think about, well, where did I demonstrate that, or where did I acquire that skill set? So a lot of organizations now are changing more towards kind of a behavioral interview process, where they're trying to figure out whether the candidates possess the behaviors required to do the job they're trying to fill effectively. And so questions will be, if you think of a customer service, they're always dealing with conflict. A question might be, if you were in an interview, Madeline, can you think of a time in a past job, whether in the job or outside of the job, where there was a conflict? What happened and how you dealt with it? And so is that something you can prepare for? Well, yeah, you can, because you've taken the steps of highlighting what skill sets are required for that position and then going through it, doing your own self-assessment, and then looking for examples of how to deal with it. There's a technique, and for the life of me, I can't think who has come up with it, but it's called the STAR technique. And it's a great technique. It's very simple. It helps in not only putting your application or your resume together, it helps in the interview. And really, it's the STAR stands for what situation you were in, what tasks were required or what were involved, what did you achieve, and what were the ultimate results of that. So if I were asked a question about conflict, I would probably answer, you know, the last position I was front facing with the customers, and often they would come to pick up their package and the package wasn't ready, and there would be this conflict. I would have to assure the customer that we apologize that this is happening, we're just running a little behind because we're much busier than we thought. But what I'll do right now is I'll go in and I'll check personally to see how long it's going to be before it's ready. And then when I would do that, it would put the customer at ease because I was acknowledging them and trying to deal with it. And then when I did come out with the package, sometimes when it was early, they loved me. When it came out a little late, they were still okay because they knew I put the effort towards meeting their need. And so when an employer hears a response like that, it gives them the sense that, one, I experienced something like that before, but more importantly, it's something that they know their own employees go through with the customers that they deal with. And when they make that connection, that clear connection, it just increases your competitiveness amongst all the candidates and perhaps gives you a better edge on getting that opportunity.
Really good points, really good points. And one that I know we've certainly stressed with young job seekers that, you know, you have to have some answers to some questions related to how you would handle a situation. And I would venture to say that an older worker would have those readily in their background. So it wouldn't be as difficult for them to come up with those examples and would perhaps make the whole sequence of the interview a little bit easier. But I like the STAR or the idea from that STAR, so that you really understand that you've got to demonstrate, you've got to identify it, you've got to demonstrate it, you've got to show even verbally what I said, what I did, and why I did it this way. I think that's really, really smart. Thank you for that. And thank you again. This is an exciting interview to have, because I know there are many jobs out there and there are many older workers out there. And perhaps the older worker is actually going to be sought after because of the skills and abilities that they've already been able to develop. So thank you so much for your time and your expertise. It's been awesome speaking with you, and I hope we can talk again sometime. Thank you.
Thank you, Madeline. Likewise.
You have been listening to Madeline Corelli talking with Professor J.P. Hatala of Flowwork International. Be sure to listen next week at this time when Madeline will be in conversation with another expert on a topic that will help us deal with aging, a new reality, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldrop, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Centre.